Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kick Fighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lorddaul.podbean.com. I try to upload an episode once a week. It was every 2 weeks this time because I had to work a fight out in Sweden. But I am right back at you with another episode. But once again, lorddaul.podbean.com for the blog. The most efficient way to get the show is to enter the iTunes search engine and put Warman Kickfighting Show, and it pops right up. Just enter that in the search engine, pops right up. I'll go ahead and get into the action. I've missed some things. I will go ahead and I will end the show on the news of Utley Mariana's passing. I thought that was definitely sad to see that when I got up this morning. Again, not everybody in the world's going to be, you know, Peter Hartz and Ernesto Hoos, but you are going to have a place in the kickboxing community if you compete at a high level or if you compete against notable names. So I definitely want to end the show and talk about him, but I'll go ahead and start off the show with a lot of the action that I've missed while I've been gone. We start off with the Glory results. Glory that went down in it's called Glory Holland, even though it took place in an area that's kind of more known for the Netherlands, not so much in Holland. So I don't want to get, too much into the Den Bosch location situation. Let's go ahead and talk about the action. We'll go ahead and start with the undercard. A lot of good stuff. Zakaria Zoghri put on a great show against Yekin Askul. Askul's always been tough. But of course, he gives rounds away because he's trying to show that toughness. As Zoghri was able to land combinations and low kicks all fight, big hand flow, gets into his jumping knee offense here and there. You could see Yekin's been in this game for a really long time, so he's a tough dude, and he was able to get his shots on ZZ here and there. But Zoghri was just too good, too much volume. That's the main thing. One of my favorite things about him being signed to Glory is the consistency and how much offense that he puts into every single round. And if you're going to beat him, it's not because he's not scoring. You know, he's definitely going to get his offense in. And in the loss to Elias Blade, really, it was a product of him doing just a little bit too much of, you know, jumping knees and all that other kind of flash. I thought if he had just kept it to the basic kickboxing flow, I thought he had some really good rounds against Elias Blade. But he is who he is, and he likes to play with that flash. He likes to play with the spinning offense. He likes to play with the jumping offense here and there. So that is who he is. And he put on an excellent show. Very entertaining fight to get us started. Victory for Zoghri over Askul. In a fight of young prospects, Tijani Bastadi gets a victory over Yusuf Asuk. Started off this fight extremely well. He threw a high kick and he missed it. And he turned it. He followed through with a spinning back fist. Caught Bastadi, put Bastadi down. But when Bastadi got up, he showed a lot of veteran guile for a young guy. He's focused. He knew that his boxing was scoring consistently. He kept putting the pressure on, and he scored it down against Yusuf later in the round. So it was awesome first round. And then Bastadi went on to take over rounds two and three the exact same way. I think he scored another down in round two. But I just like that. I like that mentality. You go down, you get up. I like that okay, the worst, you know, the worst is you get KO'd. But you start off the fight in one of the worst ways you could, considering you're trying to get a decision over three rounds at the bare minimum. Taking it down is really bad. Only thing worse, of course, is getting stopped. He had the mentality, going down twice, of course. He had the mentality of, okay, clear my head. It wasn't that bad of a shot. Let me get back to work. And he went back in there and he started working. He had a low kick game. We wanted to use the low kick game. He usually plays single kicks and then all boxing. But I thought that he was clean. I thought that he did some good things. Yusuf looked like he slowed after the early explosion. It's almost like the shot that landed, you know, made him think that Bastadi was a little bit more gone than maybe he was. Maybe he used more energy than he thought. But the skill proved out, and Bastadi proved to be the more skilled of the two fighters. Still good stuff by Yusuf Asuk. I think that he's a talented guy, and he's young, so he's got time to get better. But the day belonged to the tall Bastadi, who is so weird to see, you know, 154-pounders at the weight of, what, we're talking 6'2 and 6'3, like 1'6'2 and a half, 6'3. That's really, really, really tall for the division. So good stuff, both guys. Bastadi gets the victory. In one of the fights that can only be described as the most Michael Duke thing ever, Murad Buzidi comes out with what I called a veteran defensive game that had offense here and there, but is more about the defense. Michael Duke psyched himself up, mentally readied himself to try to go for a KO. You could see it. He mentally, that's what he was going to do out there. He had his mind made up. He's going to throw the big shots. Murad Buzidi, he had his Romy Bonjasky on. He had the tight guard. He didn't give up any big shots. He maybe got hit with one here and there, like one good solid hook, but nothing that had the head snapping, nothing like that had him in trouble. He stayed behind his guard, and then he'd work a good low kick game, or he'd go into the clinch and land a knee here and there, but then he'd go back to it. He played defense. Duke got frustrated by the fact that he wasn't getting the fight that he wanted, got frustrated by the fact that he wasn't getting the offensive scores that he got in his previous outing. It just seemed like it was a combination of things that led to him holding on in the clinch a little bit longer, a little bit of, you know, pushing with the head. I won't call it full-blown headbutting, but I'll definitely say that he was aggressive in that department as far as trying to be a little bit meaner here, trying to be a little bit more aggressive in these spots, trying to be a guy who was no longer winning a kickboxing bout, but trying to send the message to the other guy, I don't like how you're fighting. I don't like that you're not doing anything. I don't like that you're not exchanging. And Buzidi was about his work. Kept with the knees in the clinch, kept with the low kicks in space. Next thing you know, Duke, three back-to-back excessive holds. Ref tried to break, continues to hold. They deducted him twice, and when they went to the third one, I was like, okay, can you no longer win a decision? I wonder if they're going to call it. And then he just disqualified him on the spot. Michael Duke is just he is one of the more head-scratching kickboxing athletes that I've seen in these past years. Like, it's just – it really is something that – I can't even put words to what I've seen from him as a performer. This guy, I mean, after the Daniel Yonga fight, it looked like he solved a lot of his early problems. In their first fight, it looked like he, you know, mentally quit. You know, that's, I remember they were saying, Gokansaki said it when we were in the back. Gokansaki says, man, he was like, it's his heart. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes his heart's not there. So that's the mentality that a lot of people had going into this, you know, about who he is and who he was as far as what happens when things get tough. If he's in a situation like Jacoby where he's the better guy, he can blow him out of there and get the victory. But what happens when he meets resistance? It looked like those questions were answered in his performance with Daniel Yonga. Goes out there, scores some big shots. Yonga goes down. He goes down. Yonga goes down. Back and forth. It's a war. He scores a knockdown in the fourth round. To seal it, and you're like, man, Duke answered every question about him. Then he goes out and gets stopped by Sicking early, and then he fights way too soon for most people after getting, you know, after a KO loss less than a month ago. Goes back out there, and he's determined to find the kind of fight that he wants to have. He doesn't get it, and then he gets disqualified. Just a bizarre, bizarre career and some of the decisions made, but he's got good management, good people behind him because he keeps getting these opportunities. But man, we got to calm it down, get yourself back to some clean kickboxing and see if your skill set can challenge some of the best in the world. Because even though he got knocked out by Tyrone Spong after he had dropped him, the dropping Tyrone Spong showed that he wasn't afraid and that he is mentally ready to go after him. That's the kind of guy we need. Win, lose, or draw, he should be that guy. And that clip showed all over the place where he scores the knockdown and Tyrone Spong gets up and knocks him right back out. That clip showed a whole bunch. So he's got to be that guy. He can't let the game frustrate him into a disqualification. You just can't lose. You just cannot go out and fight in that way, I should say. You just can't go out and let that be your reputation. Get back to kickboxing. As for Murad Buzidi, I don't know if anybody's fought in glory as much as this guy has. He's really put on a great show. Win, lose, or draw, he's brought it. And I thought that this fight, Michael Duke's response, was credited to Buzidi's defense and veteran guile. That's the thing that made Duke crazy. Not that Duke walked in the ring crazy. He walked in there trying to fight a certain kind of fight and implement a certain kind of game plan. Buzidi shut all that down, and that led to Duke losing. And that's just my personal opinion. I don't know what's going through Duke's mind, but I'm just reading. It looked like Buzidi's defense was the thing that caused the frustration. So as for Buzidi, whatever they got for him is good. Hopefully there's another opportunity for him, not in the not too distant future. But he's a talented guy, and hopefully we'll see more from him. We move down the card. We get Mirthu Grunhart gets a victory over Alan Sinsen. Split decision, 29-28, 28-29, and then 30-27 on three other cards. I believe when I watched it, I had Mirthu Grunhart winning all the rounds because he was so much, he's aggressive. He kept landing what I call the sexy shots, kept landing the head snappers, and he would let offense go and flourish really, really well. Shansen has got like some of the worst defense that I've ever seen for a guy fighting in Glory. And what I mean by that is his hands would be up, but they wouldn't do anything. Like they didn't have a defensive response. So what I mean by a defensive response is if a shot's thrown at you and you block it with your guard, that's a defensive response, meaning you had to lock your, put your fingers, so the outside of your fingers should be touching your temples. That's kind of one way of thinking about it. But if you have gloves on, it's weird. But the way I see it is the hand is usually locked to your temples when a punch is coming. And if the hook looks like it's wide, all you have to do is reach back towards your ear and you're blocking more of the shot. That's a response to punches. Or if somebody parries a shot, or if you shoot a punch at them and they slap it away, that is a defensive response. Someone shoots a punch at you and you move your head out of the way, that is a defensive response. I feel like there hasn't been, or there wasn't any defensive responses. He just either was out of range to get hit or he was getting hit. That's what I felt like when I was watching. And again, it's, Alan's first fight in the big stage, but it just looked like his defense wasn't there. His corner throughout, Nicky Hammers was yelling over and over and over, keep your hands up. For 15 minutes, that was the main instruction. Get your hands up. When he went back to the corner, he was like, back to the low kicks and keep your hands up. If that's your main defensive, if that's the main objective of your corner, they know even in practice that it's a problem that you don't get your hands up. So outside of that, he did show some pretty good low kicks. He did show some decent kickboxing and spots. He wasn't an unskilled guy in there. He definitely, and I can understand some of those rounds being close in favor of his because he was steady. He didn't really have combo to kickboxing flow, but he had volume in kicks or volume in punches, whether they were landing or not, and he just kept trying. And I thought that Mirthu Grunhart, because of that defensive, or lack thereof from Alan, Mirthu was able to score the big kind of shots that win him rounds, and I think that's why he took this decision. It's already looking like he is set to go. I can't remember what card's coming up, but Mirthu Grunhart's got the next one scheduled. Mirthu is the new, Iron Man for them. I mentioned Buzidi and how many times he's fought for them. I'd say Mirthu Grunhart in the last 2 years is another guy who gets used on the card all the time. And that's important. Got to have guys who are recognized by an audience. And Mirthu Grunhart has given us KOs. He's given us good wins. He's given us good action and losses. He's a guy to really, really pay attention to. So shout out to Mirthu Grunhart. Okay, so now we go to one of the weirder fights for me to talk about because I thought that it would be a very clean decision in favor of Robin Vermoos-Mullen over Petr Boomerang, Kit Mukau. Now, everybody has been attacking me on this because I thought that it was clear and I was just making an argument for why I could see how the judges would score things already. So now I'm going to go ahead and make both sides of the argument. I've seen this coming up, all right? Seen this coming. I've said this before, but I will bring it up again, all right? This is how I believe they're scoring in Glory, which is how they scored in its Showtime, which is how they scored in K1. There is a long, long, long history of kickboxing not scoring shots at the arm, kicks to the arm, no matter how strong. There's a really long history of those not having a lot of value on the scorecards. Now, I've heard someone say the argument, and I'll go ahead and address the argument. What about kicking someone in the leg? Can't you, if that's kicking a limb, why do we count kicking them in the leg the way we would count kicking them in the arm? If it's both attacking a limb, why isn't it the same? Here's why I would say it's not the same. I've seen a lot of guys stop by low kicks that they couldn't go on and so on. I have seen very few guys stop by body kicks or kicks to the arm. Like I've seen very, very few times, and I can do it. I can recall it because I watch a lot of Muay Thai. I've seen where people have been stopped by broken, up. Oh, I give you a Glory example. Don't even have to go that far. Jacoby had his arm broken when he went against Simon Marcus. He was so it can happen. You can win a fight in that way. So I'm not saying that's impossible. But there is a long history of consistent kickboxing scores to the leg that has gotten guys in trouble, affected their offense, and turned them into completely different fighters, not to mention gotten them out of there and scored downs with low kicks. Has a long, long history. So in kickboxing, the bigger organizations, they've always valued that kick strongly. All the heroes of kickboxing, there's a long history of guys who are really, really good at hurting you with the legs. Whether it's Peter Arts, Hoost, Bonjasky, whoever you want to think of that's a great kickboxer, a lot of them have a good reputation towards scoring that. So understand that that's how the scores could lean towards something in the leg has more value than something on the arm. I'm just going to go ahead and make that argument. That's why I do believe that a low kick should score harder, you know, better than a kick to the body. Plus, the definition of blocking for a low kick is so much stronger than the definition of blocking for a body kick. There are so many different ways to block a body kick. I've seen people lift up just the one arm and hold it in tight. I've seen people, you know, one way I teach it is to bring the opposite arm across, to put the weight on the lead knee, to lean into the kick, lock that side of the body up. One arm plays shield, the other arm plays, to slow the impact, and then you can block and throw off of it. And then, of course, you can also go elbow to knee. That's another way of blocking it, more like a check. When someone throws a low kick, if you don't get out of the way of the low kick, you've got to check it. And those are two ways. Those are two ways. So I think that because it's harder to determine when a body kick has been, you know, blocked correctly, I think that it can still show up as not that effective from the scorecard. I'm not saying that he wasn't hurt. I'm just saying that it can show up that way. So now I want to go ahead and go into the actual scoring. I just wanted to address those two issues because those are things that I got on Twitter. I remember a gentleman saying to me specifically, what about kicking in the leg? Kicking in the arm and kicking in the leg should be the same because they're limbs. So that's why I addressed that. As far as the scoring goes, if I've got a three-minute round of work and I'm going off the history of it, and one of the things that changed my history understanding of it is how Bukau was scored. Because for me, Bukau won a whole lot of fights until I realized how little they were scoring kicks to the arms. For me, he didn't lose to Andy Sauer the first time. Of course, he still scored a stoppage to the second one. And I thought that he won the third fight. You know, that's just my personal opinion. In those fights, he had always been consistently scoring to the arm. And just a quick score, not necessarily the most powerful, sometimes very powerful, sometimes not. But I've remembered those fights specifically, and I remember them not getting good scores. Another good example, his fight with Koza Takada, very, very technical. In that fight, he scored a decent amount of body kicks. They still go to an extra round, and it's one of the extra rounds where I was like, you know what, I don't really have a problem with this extra round because the flow of the fight was so slow. But he was the first person where I realized maybe I'm seeing it different than what their scoring criteria is, because it has always been, it's also been said in the back by several fighters, and I've worked in the back of Glories before, that they do not value the kick to the arm as much. They've said it. So again, it's their promotion, they can score it how they want. Based on my understanding of kickboxing through the years that I've been following the sport, and based on how Glory has scored kickboxing before in the past, I can see someone who is scoring a body kick, no matter how strong, consistently. If it scores to the arm and it looks like there's somewhat of a effort to get that up. Because remember, he thinks he's protecting his body. And maybe those who are scoring the cards are seeing a kick in that direction as a kick at the body that the arm gets in the way of, not necessarily a kick aimed right at the limb. So I'm saying that this is what I feel like after my years of watching kickboxing. This is what I think they're seeing. So I go ahead and I combine that understanding with the way that I've seen them score kickboxing in the past with my own understanding of kickboxing. If someone is throwing combination flow, low kicks, and knees, if they can blend that all together, if you're watching from ringside as a judge, I can see how that person could be getting the big scores. The big scores in terms of moving ahead on the scorecard with consistency. I believe the same gentleman said diversity of strikes shouldn't be a criteria. Like it's not in the criteria. I'm only making an argument for if I'm looking at a round and I'm going off of two guys and the feel, the fight feel of one of the individuals seems like it's consistently one strike. And the fight feel of the offense from the other guy feels like he's throwing boxing, he's throwing kicks, he throws a knee here and there. If it's that way, I can definitely make the argument that that is what they're seeing ringside. Like, that's what I felt like that would they be seeing. Round one, clear, without hesitation, Petch Pumarung won the round. He was scoring the big kicks, but on side of the big kicks was the step knees. The step knees were the most awesome thing about the round. So he had the step knees and he had the boxing. Clear for round one. Then rounds two through five, a lot less step knee, a lot more body kick, a lot more straight shot. But it seemed like there was never any combo flow to really dominate rounds. So no three shots, then kick, you know, because those are exchanges. If you can do that, even if you don't score them all, understand how if there's a guy or girl watching ringside, how they could be like, okay, that's the volume that wins the round, or that volume win in exchange. When they turn into single and move, it opens the door for somebody who throws in flurries to steal rounds. I've always been a person that's valued clean connects above all other things, but I understand that in, you know, scoring combat sports, if somebody throws, in particular kickboxing, with a high offensive output and high diversity, it makes those moments look like they are winning the round. It makes it seem like this person's doing it all. Round five, very, very clear round for Rob Van Roosmalen. I think he did everything he wanted to in that round. He had combo to hands to low kick flow. He was walking Petch Pumarung down. I thought he did a lot of good things. That's a very clear round from him. So the thing is, the argument, of course, in this fight is rounds three through four. That's where it is. If somebody had this one round ahead for Robin or one round ahead for Petch Pumarung, I wouldn't have gone too crazy. But I felt like off of what I know of their scoring, which is my main understanding of why I scored the fight the way I scored it, I felt like Robin Van Roosmalen won the fight. There is, of course, the counter to this. The counter to this, of course, is the Max Kellerman says this really well. He's a boxing reporter and commentator. Max Kellerman always uses the term, if you watch a round, which guy would you rather be? And that's definitely something that comes into play a lot. And for me, watching this action, watching what I know of kickboxing, I would say that I would rather be Robin Van Roosmalen in round five, and I'd rather be Petch Pumarung in round one. They thought those were the most clear rounds. But outside of that, and I mean this, outside of that, I really, really, really thought that the rounds would be scored for Robin Van Roosmalen, and there would be the community of people who are really into Thai fighting, or into the Thais and how the Thais score. They would be upset when the decision was ranked. It was that kind of fight. It was that kind of fight on paper before it even happened. So the fight pretty much played out how it did. I have one more thing. No problem whatsoever if you thought Petch Pumarung won the fight. None. Because I know that some people, when they score things, they are still very much going off of what they feel is their criteria for how it should be scored. Like, I understand that they feel like, man, I felt like this guy had the stronger connects. Even though most of them were body kicks, I felt like they had the stronger connects. I understand that. I understand it. But I'm just saying, do not feel like that argument supersedes all other arguments in kickboxing, in particular if you know the history of kickboxing. So it can't be forever and ever they've been scoring it wrong for 15 years. At some period of time, you've got to be like, this is how they score. So let's look at Sitichai. Perfect example. Sitichai fights very different than the guy who was single body kick, who, you know, went against Robin Van Roosmalen and had some decisions not go his way. I thought that he has since then, you know, look at the offense that he comes out with now. A lot of boxing, a lot more boxing in there. And because he's so good at it, a lot of clean kickboxing work with his body kick still intact. But you look at, you know, when he went against David Sivadov, where he had that perfect combination of the step knees with the body kicks, with the boxing, and he had that great series where he puts them away. I think that he looked at how fights were being scored against him, and he changed how he fought, and it changed his whole offensive output. I think that that is something that people should realize. Not how do you think they should be scoring it, how are they scoring it? And that's what I do as a, you know, as a guy who works with, you know, with a lot of high-level MMA fighters. When I'm in the corner, I always say to myself, don't go off of how I think this should be scored. Go off of how I think it's going to be scored. And that's how I judge accordingly. So just consider that that's the main criteria that I'm going into. I am very, very much going off of what is the history of scoring. It can't just be wrong. They're wrong, I'm right for the last 15 years. If there's some sort of consistency to their scoring, then I'm okay with it. And I do feel like Glory has been consistent with their scoring. And for those who feel like Glory just hates TIE fighters, they could just as easily not sign any of these guys. You know what I'm saying? It's of no problem for them to not have, I want a certain style, so I'm not going to give any of these guys any opportunities. I thought Glory has done a great job of using TIEs. Way better job than K1 ever did. It should be noted. Because I felt like in the heyday, the great era of K1 Max, I really believe that they thought Bukau was good and Bukau would be it. They brought in Bukau and Yostenklai on one card. Yostenklai had a very dominant decision on an early in the card. Bukau won the K1 World Grand Prix later that year. That was the end of Yostenklai's run. They did not have any more ties. They're not going to have this be tie versus tie every year. They have always been really, really wise about that sort of thing. So don't just think Glory hates ties and scores against them and that kind of stuff, whatever, because it's so much easier for them to not have these guys there and just have Robin Van Roosmalen go against the Zogari style and give you the action that they want. But they've been giving them opportunities, and I think if they adopt a more Sitichai consistently across the board, if a lot more of them play with how Sitichai performs offense, I think you'll see those scorecards go way up. So that is a really, really long time to be talking about why Robin Van Roosmalen got the victory over Patrick Van Roong. But as I said before, I have no problem if you had it the other way. I'll go ahead and jump into the four-man tournament now. D'Angelo Marshall defeats Anderson Broderick Silva in the final of that. But we'll go ahead and talk about the prelim fights. Anderson Broderick Silva comes out and gets dropped by Dionysus Stafordis. I think the Stafordis getting that knockdown early is probably the worst thing that happened to him, because I think that he went for broke and tried to get him out of there, and I think he gassed out, and Anderson Broderick Silva came on. Savvy, steady kickboxer. If you don't get him out of there, he'll get up and get back into the fight. Perfect example was his fight with Badr Hari, where Badr Hari dropped him early. He got up, went back to work, and he really fought well. A lot of people thought that should have earned an extra when he fought Badr Hari that time. He does a good job of getting back in there. He's got some good, solid, you know, kickboxing wins. Steady guy, gets the victory here. D'Angelo Marshall then goes out there and gets a pretty much run over, you know, victory over Muhammad Abdullah. Two knockdowns in round one. I think it was pretty quick. But Marshall comes out there, gets a big victory, and then Marshall goes on in the final to beat very, very clearly on all scorecards, Anderson Broderick Silva. D'Angelo Marshall enters the mix. And they talked about it before. Cor Hemmers talked about it a little bit afterwards. He said that winning the four-man tournaments doesn't necessarily mean that you get a title shot, which was something that is confusing, because they've mentioned before that this gets some title shots. We need a little bit more clarity here, because, of course, their rankings are all over the place, and we never know what to think of it. But D'Angelo Marshall's victory here, it's like you win a four-man tournament, and it gives you the opportunity to fight a guy who won the four-man tournament, or it gives you an opportunity to fight a guy who is a veteran, move you along. I'm not sure what their goal is. That's why I think they should do bigger tournaments. That gives us more clarity. This sort of situation is the main thing, because now you've got Marshall, you've got Adegbuyi, you've got Ishmael Lant. All these guys have won tournaments lately, and none of them got an opportunity to fight, you know, for the title. Now, again, Adegbuyi got his opportunity before, but the other guys didn't. And then they fought in single fights until they lost, because you're going against high-level opposition, so a loss is going to come here and there. In Ishmael Lant's situation, he won a tournament, and then he lost, he won a single fight. So he won, then won his single fight, and then he was asked to do another single fight, and then he lost. And then everybody's like, well, he just lost, so he doesn't get a title shot. So it's like, how fair is that? You know, what was he supposed to do? Just keep winning? For me to, you know, forever, and then to see someone like Ishmael Lazar get an opportunity to fight the champ and you don't, it's just a little bit weird to understand how that could be weird. Because Ishmael Lant, you know, take away that loss last year, he at the very end of the year, he had a pretty good year. So hopefully they will have a plan for D'Angelo Marshall, as they say that, you know, they just want to give him some opportunities. Maybe he can go against a guy like, you know, Ishmael Lant or anyone. Vin Siddiq would be fine. Anything to just keep him active. Good stuff for Marshall winning this tournament. Xianglong Zhang gets a victory over Wilson Sanchez Mendez. Very dominant. There was, you know, a couple downs in the fight. The Chinese fighters that they brought in so far have been talented. Now, of course, we got to get some consistency. You've got the score. You've got the card space now. Now you've got to just build the type of we've got to see them enough for fans to follow them. So it can't just be this is the new Chinese guy we brought over today. It's got to be a combination of this is someone to really pay attention to. This is someone who's going to be a star for us down the road. There's got to be a plan with these individuals. It can't just be he fights in China. It's got to be more than that. So going to go ahead and move down the line. I've got, what is it? We will, well, I guess I'll save Rico for, I'll talk about Rico now. I believe that is the last of the fights. I'm just trying to make sure I'm remembering them all correctly. Yes. So Rico Verheerven defeats Ishmael Lazar. For me, if you didn't know, like for those going into this and they're like, okay, this is how I think the fight's going to play out, it played out like that. Rico Verheerven clearly won a distant kickboxing performance. Ishmael Lazar just looked to load up, and every once in a while he was able to get one shot through. No shots and flurries. Didn't bring the, you know, he doesn't have in his tools the consistent offense to beat a guy like Rico Verheerven. He just has a pretty good low kick when he commits to it, and he's got the big power shots over the top, and he moves okay for a heavyweight because he's really probably not a heavyweight, but he's just a heavy, he's a guy who weighs a lot. But I still think that he'll have more success being that guy than a guy, because I've been seeing a lot of people say, mate, he should cut down to 85, that's where he should be. I don't think he'll be that great at 85. I think the thing that makes him special is he is quicker, despite his size, he's quicker than a lot of the big heavyweights that he goes against. And if he gets inside and starts throwing wide shots, it's harder for them to defend with their guard because their arms are longer and they leave more gaps. So I think that's kind of what made Lazar Lazar. I do feel like there is a better version of him. Like, he should never be a guy who he's walked into the ring between 270 and 290 before. He should be a guy who should be lighter, but I don't see him getting down to 205 and messing with Vakadov. Don't think so. Too skilled. He's too skilled, too athletic. It's just, it's hard. It's hard for him to ever be that kind of a guy. But we'll see. We'll see. Let's go ahead and, I'll talk about it a little bit more. Rico Verheerven, I like I said, I didn't understand what was the logic for the match. Like, I didn't understand it at all. And what I mean by I didn't understand it, it's of all the matchups to make, this one was odd. Now, again, Lazar's the ticket seller. Should that comes into play? He's got a huge fan base there. A lot of the Moroccans support him. And no matter who he fought in Infusion, a lot of Moroccans, you know, will come out and support him. And I do think that he's an all right fighter. But I do think if you're going to go against the champ, who's not going to fight that many times in a year anyways, maybe he fights four times in a year, that's pretty good in kickboxing. I think one of those opportunities should have been to someone who you guys have already given the tournament spot to or who you'd already groomed for the spot. So it has nothing to do with anything for or against Lazar. I just think that, man, make an argument for people that we like a little bit better. So who have put a little bit more resume into your business. That's what I mean by that. So Rico Verheerven. Next is, I have no idea what they're going to do with him next. He's still interested in MMA, but I'm grateful that he's kickboxing. I'm grateful that he's doing movies. I love the opportunities that are coming his way, and I wish him all the best. But all in all, solid glory card. Not super crazy awesome glory card, but very, very solid glory card. Holland, of course, it's, excuse me, the Netherlands. I'm glad that they're back in that area because all those shows are pretty much going to sell out. They've really got a good fan base, and they do a lot of things that I like, and I'm hoping that as we move down the road, we get even more high-level guys getting the opportunity to fight in Holland. They're always going to produce kickboxers. That's just who they are. We go to Rise 117 as the Super Kid does it again. Attention, Nasukawa gets a victory over Ryan Shahar with a shot to the body. Like, it was more... It was after some steady kickboxing work. He puts a big shot downstairs, gets a stoppage over Shahan, and it's crazy because Nasukawa knows when he's hit the spot. And he did it one time in another fight where he scored this teep to the body, like right in a certain spot. And I like got the toes in there. I tell my fighters all the time, sometimes when you teep, don't just be worried about getting the balls of your feet on them and pushing. Sometimes as you do it, go ahead and lock your toes in like you're like grabbing something with your hand. But do that with your toes as you fire someone's body. And man, it really has a crippling effect on some people. Like it can bring them down to the ground. So he had a fight where he did that in a teep and it put a guy down. And the moment that I watched that happen, I was like, he knows. He knows these sort of things. Because he did it and lifted his fist up before the guy had gone down, before the ref knew he got the spot. And then the guy cringed over in pain. Not saying that, not like, oh, the guy took a dive. No. It's the kind of shot that Sami Silt was killing people with that nobody knew in the beginning. They thought that, oh, that shouldn't have been that painful. And then a bunch of guys started dying from it, and you started to realize they know where they're hitting you. They know the spot. Nasukawa knows the spot. And here was another situation where he hit Shaheen in the body, and he lifted his fist up right away. He knew he had scored it, and Ryan Shaheen turned over and went down. Like, it was just in horrible pain because he knows that offense. That means that Nasukawa wins. I believe it was for a version of the ISKA title. He's the truth. He is one of the best young prospects in the world. In the last 15 years, I would say, you know, Elise Blade, young star that showed it right away. Alim Dabayev, young star that showed it right away. These guys are, like, special. And I think Nasukawa is in that very, very special mode. Like the sort of feeling that people had when Badr Hari was coming up. He is that level. He is elite and he is young. So I definitely want to see more from Nasukawa, who's quickly becoming one of the best kickboxers, Muay Thai fighters in the world. This kid is special. Go ahead and give you guys a couple other results from that card. I won't go down the whole card. Yoshihitsu Morimoto gets a victory over... it ended in a draw in his fight with Mashidi Kudo. And we have Shimza Kengo gets a victory over Zhejiang Jiang. It was a knockout with the right hand early in the third round. And let me see. We won't talk about the rest of the card, just mostly results-based. The main thing that I wanted to talk about, of course, was Nasukawa doing what he does. Because it's just, and again, he hasn't lost yet that I know of. Just a special fighter. Very, very talented guy. I want to see more from him down the road. Speaking of someone I want to see more from, Elise Blade continues his hot year. Blade is on fire this year. The Zogari victory just got it started. You know, he's just continuing to go out there, put on great performance after great performance. This kid can fight. Like, he's a talented guy. He goes out there and he starches Menohan. Can't believe I pronounced that wrong. I've been saying it right all week. Manoan, he goes out there, stops him in the first round on the Fight League 6 card. And I thought to myself when the fight was made, it's like, all right, this would be cool for Elise Blade to go out there, get this fight opportunity. Goes out there, gets the first round stoppage, and I'm like, he's proven to be the truth. He's getting – there's nothing more important for him than that, one, he gets a fight in K1. Because I believe right now they have a deeper pool of guys in that weight class. That weight class being around 143 pounds, so around, 65-ish kg, or excuse me, around, 65-ish kgs. He's fighting the better guys. Him versus Misaki Nori, him versus Ku, him versus that group of athletes is where he should be once a year. But his fights outside of it are very much guys like Zogari, guys like Minowan. He is fighting really good guys and getting his hands raised. Blade is, you know, still young. You know, I want to say 21, 22. But I feel like he's in his prime. Like, I feel like most of the time I feel like people's prime comes a little bit later. I feel like in kickboxing the prime usually happens between 26 and 31. But man, can this guy fight. Like, this guy is so, so talented. Talk about a couple other results on that card. Oled Hamed gets a victory over Victor Camarero. Quincy Jones gets a victory over Melvin Wassing. Errol Conan gets a victory over Noah Opetuale. All those unanimous decisions. I don't want to go down the whole card, but there is one more fight that I definitely want to bring up. No one is having a surprise great year like Melanie Higgins is having. She is on fire this year. She goes out, she wins the Crush title, definitely good stuff, as far as definitely good stuff in terms of turning your career around, coming back. But her victory over Freda Carat, I think she's riding a 3-fight or 4-fight winning streak with the 2 wins from her winning the Crush title to her defending that Crush title victory to this. She's got another opportunity out in Japan. She left the focus on MMA for a little bit, and of course a lot of people saw her. One of my fighters fought her in MMA, Montana Stewart, and she just did a great job of, in my personal opinion, of just going back to work. If she loses, in no way does she think it's the end of the world. She's just, their mentality is way different. Like, she started her MMA career, I want to say 0-2 or 0-3, and then she gets a victory. It's just the mentality of, oh, I'm a fighter, so I'm going to go out there and fight again. She stayed with it. She kept getting opportunities in both MMA and kickboxing. And lo and behold, she gets a fight, wins the title earlier this year, defends the title, and now she wins here. She's just caught fire. And it's just a testament to just being mentally strong and getting back in there. Melanie Higgins, congratulations on another win, and hopefully you can keep it rolling. Definitely, definitely good stuff. Going to go ahead and move to another card now. There's been some good kickboxing going on late. I won't get all of it, but I'll get most of it. We will go to, what was that? I'll do that French card. Yeah, I'll do that French card. We had a victory, it's called Capital Fights 2, went down in Paris, I believe, and I'll talk about a couple results from that. It was a mixture of kickboxing and Muay Thai. Johan Ladon gets a victory over Jibril Ayo. I know I'm not pronouncing it right. I believe it's Ahoa. Iho going against Ladon, no shame there. You're going against a guy who is up in class, because Johan Ladon's one of the better kickboxers / Muay Thai fighters in France for the last 15 years, once upon a time. Won the Showtime title against Murat Gregorian. A lot of people don't know that. Like, they don't remember that. But Johan Ladon had a really good night in Lyon one night and won the title. I remember that. It was a really, really cool day. Cool day for him, and I was there at that event in Lyon, and I was like, man, this, I don't think he's going to beat everybody, but I think that there are some good names that Johan Ladon can beat. This was one of those names, so shout out to him. Good work. Daniel Sam gets a victory over Nordin Melhadin. Daniel Sam, consummate journeyman in this game. He just will go out there, pack his heart at, go out there, fight anybody in the world, no matter what the level. Really, really cool that at this stage in his life, at this stage in his, career, he is still out there fighting. He may not get the glory opportunities, and I think he's good enough to beat a lot of guys in glory. Plus, I think glory would do well to keep him around to have guys go against him. I thought that all the different examples of athletes and sports, there's always that, call them journeymen, call them test, whatever you want to do it. Everybody has those guys on deck. Everybody has those guys in the repertoire as this is the opposition that you want to go against. This is who you want to face. Everybody has those guys. Sam should be that for glory. What do you do with D'Angelo? Put him against Daniel Sam. Like, that's what they need to use him for. So, glory, consider keeping Sam on your roster to test guys, because he did a really good job the last time they used him in that role. If he gets some wins and he's fighting for your title, makes sense there too. Daniel Sam, consummate kickboxer, consummate Muay Thai fighter. Get this guy fight opportunities. He's the man. Stefane Sospargi gets a victory over Pavel Voronin. Unfortunately, Sospargi didn't turn into the guy that we thought he would in the weight class. Like, we didn't. He's got a really weird style, tough to get, a hold of him. He throws shots from weird angles. He really had a good career and really did some good things in the division at 93 kgs until he went against better guys. Got stopped by Daniel Yunga. I want to say that there's a Carnage, Nathan Corbett loss in there too. He didn't win the step-up fights, to the best of my memory as I'm trying to recall it. But he got some opportunities, got some wins here and there. He was still a good fighter. Even though he didn't approach greatness, he still was and is a good fighter. Good victory for him here. Yannick Rian gets a victory over Eddie Nate Slimani. Slimani's really, really struggling with the consistency because there are times where I watch Slimani and I'm like, this dude's awesome. He fights all the time. Slimani fights like once a month. So I love his activity. But, you know, Yannick Rian, it's not that – I mean, he's talented, but the kind of guy that I would expect more from in my personal opinion. Really, really do think that he should Rene should continue to do his work and get better, but Slimani has got to find the consistency somewhere. That's the one thing that's lasting, you know, lacking. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you got to get better. You got to get better all the time, and consistency is a sign of improvement. And that's what we're still missing. One day he's great, next day he's missing. But that's just kind of the nature of how things are in this game. There were some other Muay Thai fights on the card, a couple of MMA fights on the card, but I think I talked about the main ones that I wanted to talk about. I guess I'm trying to decide which card I want to move on to. There's a lot of good stuff, and you know, when it's out there, you want to make sure you don't miss anything. I hate looking at my notes. I should have forced myself to go down a certain path, but I did not. I decided that I was just going to rough it and jump all over the place, and I will continue to rough it. I will go ahead and go with some Thai Fight. Thai Fight hit the road doing the international thing. They were in Turin, Italy. Sanchai's back, and Sanchai wins, because that's what Sanchai does when he fights non-Thais. He wins. Sanchai gets a victory over Sean Kangalusi, and Sanchai just Sanchai'd him. Just too slick. You know, scores and doesn't get hit back, gets good, does a good job with the low kicks, and, you know, plays with his flash here and there. Low kicks, not necessarily outside leg. Most of the time he scores the inside leg. Body kick, the smoothness, and then the boxing, Sanchai's got it. He really does. Very fun guy to watch despite the fact that he's getting older. He's still the man, and he's still one of the last great fighters that I haven't seen live. I've got to get somewhere where I could see Sanchai live, and then I've got everybody covered. I've seen every great fighter of my generation. You know, I've seen them all compete live. He's the last one I need to get on the list. Sanchai gets the victory here. Sensicorn gets a victory over Martin Mione. Again, Sensicorn, older, but he has always been a good show, and they've used him in many international opportunities. Shout out to Sensicorn getting the victory. Let me see. I don't want to talk about them all. Bryce Duvall gets a victory over Patsenlek Ratchanan. Bryce Duvall is very, very talented. I've liked him. I've watched him fight several times. Got to keep working at it. He loses to some in some of his step-up opportunities. I want to see him get more step-up opportunities, more names. I like him. I'm still not going to call him great or anything, but I think that he's showed me some things to make me think that he could be something. He's got some losses, of course, but I like him. Sayok is, as I mentioned before, he's now at Pampamwang. He gets a victory over Julian and Mary. And I always use Sayok whenever I use my example of a Thai that I wonder how they got international opportunities. And the reason why I say that is I don't want to say it as a insult, but I want to say it as a, look, for whatever reason, this guy gets a lot of opportunities, but really he plays a score. Doesn't really get into a lot of exchanges. He's got fights that you forget about. Not saying that he's not talented. I'm just saying a lot of his performances don't wow you and internationally. So I always thought that he was one of the guys who should be thankful for his management team and the people around him, because he's not like watching Sanchai come out there, you know, or even Sensicorn, or Bukau. Like, there's no feeling you get. Like, when Bukau walks out, I'm telling you, I watched Bukau go to Jamaica in front of a room of all Africans, our African-descended, Jamaicans, and perform his Y crew with such balance and in such a way that people in the crowd started to cheer and clap while he was doing the White Crew because he does it so well. There's such an it factor to him. Seok is the opposite of that. He's a Thai who just has never given me more. That doesn't mean he's bad. When you hear me, that doesn't mean he's bad. I hope that doesn't come off. And it doesn't mean that he's not talented, and it doesn't mean that he's not skilled. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying this guy, when he fights on cards, I can easily forget that he fought on the card. He hasn't given me performances that have, you know, captivated me. And I think that's the only thing missing from his career. But he really did have a good opportunity, trained a lot of good places. I wish him all the best in whatever he does. But it's really, really weird when I saw his name pop up on this. Yusuf Bohanan gets a victory over Anar Kamlali. Yusuf, of course, winning another forang to win a title recently, and a French forang to win a major Thai stadium. Always awesome that he's competing. I remember the fight with Bacal that, you know, where I think he got injured in the first. So he's had some disappointment in his career, but he's really been on fire of late. So congratulations to him. A decent card put together here, but, man, want to see more from those athletes down the road, some of them against better opposition. Go ahead and go to Top King. I'll talk about some of the fights, not all the fights. Man, I'm really bringing you guys the results this episode. Dude, Witcher, who's at Kim Muay Thai now, gets a victory over Dimitri Filippo by knockout in the first one. Jodwicha is a guy who I wondered what he'd look like on the international stage because he was so clinch heavy when he fought in the major stadiums in Thailand. Like just he has that I talk about all the time. It's almost like a headlock where he can get control of you and he pups knees from the side. That's how he finishes a lot of the clinch exchanges. So it's like he plays bicep and collar tie and he keeps working in there. He plays with good angles, but then as soon as the guy tries to close the distance for body lock, he immediately traps the head and then he tries to score knees from the side. He's always been really, really good about doing that and doing it in a way where he's not getting kneed in the back and the side. So I was like, man, with a guy who's got such a clinch heavy game, how are we going to see him perform when he goes to the international stage? And so far, it's been pretty good. He's been letting his hands go. He's been getting opportunities and winning opportunities like this. Shout out to him for getting that big-time win. I believe this card was in China, so shout out to him for that victory. We got Romary. He gets a victory over Ruslan Artakiev. Again, my knockout. That's the goal. If you're going to fight, Vinny Shorman said this to me best. If you're so much better than the guy, get him out of there. So sometimes when the ties are so much better than guys, they usually want to play a, you know, ho-hum decision kind of game. But if you're really better than the guy, that guy shouldn't be standing. Get him out of there. So good stuff by Rongel Ri. We also had Young Kapol get a victory over Ben Mahani. Sangwani gets a victory over, I believe it's pronounced Sato Gomba. And we have Pacquiao get a victory over RB Mieniv. And I believe it's pretty much Thai versus the world card in China was pretty much won by all the Thai fighters. So definitely good stuff in some of those situations. They were one-sided, but good stuff by the card. And Jodwicha, man, I hope you get bigger and better opportunities as we continue down your fight career. I'll go ahead and wrap up these results with just a couple fights from results from the Crush card the other day. Rico defeats Pettis Leona 30-29, 30-28 on the cards. Wins the 60kg title. I am not the highest on Riku Unpo. I think he's the kind of person where go ahead and name whoever at 60kgs and they could take his title. So if you were to say, okay, one of the Arabes want to fight him, I'm like, either of the Arabes are going to win. That's just kind of how I feel. So I think that this is still a good win for him, and I think that it was a big night, and I just got to see consistency against high-level opposition. I don't know how he'll do against international opposition, but he's still a talented guy, and we'll wait and see, and we'll see something down the road. Kana gets a clear victory over Grace Spicer, scoring a down in one or two of the rounds. Spicer was tough, did not give up. She's a very, very tough girl. I've seen her fight in England. I've seen her fight, of all people, the aforementioned. She's got a Muay Thai victory over, just had a quick little mental lapse, but over Melanie Haggis, she has a she's got a victory over her in full rules Muay Thai. So she's tough. She wasn't going to go down. I think her camp mentioned something about her having an injury going into the fight, but not wanting to turn the opportunity down. Kind of brought that work, and that's what she's supposed to do. She's a talented girl. She wants to get herself back into the title picture. Of course, that's just kind of a case of win, but I know that, you know, she wants to just get herself back there. This is how you do it. You get people out of there. You really make the decision clear. You make the decision dominant. So shout out to Kana. Good stuff there. Finally, breaking in the stride. This will probably be the last fight I talk about on this card. After getting stopped several times, after losing decisions, Minoru Kimura gets a victory over Kenjo. 3 knockdowns in the first. Wasn't the cleanest, but with him it doesn't have to be. Just land the death blow, build on the death blow. I was happy to see him, you know, back celebrating and winning, because he really does and really is important for kickboxing and Muay Thai in Japan, because we've got a foreign kid who speaks Japanese as well as anybody that I've ever known to make the trip over. Speaks Japanese fluent. Girls love him. Has an appeal about him. Just he has the it factor. Has the KO pop. Problem that he has is he doesn't have the best defense, and he isn't a consistent kickboxer as far as how scores are made done. So we'll see what happens to him down the road, but awesome, awesome stuff by him getting the victory and getting off the slide, because he really was in a funk there. Hopefully he can turn it around and get some wins as we go down this list. Not much else. Kota Hiroaki gets a victory over Little Tiger. Little Tiger's older, so victories over her don't mean as much as they did back in the day. She's, you know, stayed with the game. She fights hard, but I think Kota Hiroaki, just going in a different direction. I just think that younger, stronger, I expect her to be competing. And again, this is one of the smallest weight classes there is. These girls compete around 100 pounds, around 105 pounds. So we're talking about very, very small human beings. But definitely wanted to mention that fight. And I'll pretty much end it there. Ayumi Texas is one of my favorite names in this whole card, and all of Muay Thai and all of kickboxing. Ayumi Texas is a great name. But we'll go ahead and wrap the show up there. And as I mentioned before, I was going to make sure that I set time apart to talk about the loss of, I mean, I know that not everybody knows who he is. So, I mean, I'm not, you know, going to go crazy that you guys don't know who Utley Mariana is. And if you look him up, Gokhan Saki is probably the first fight you're going to see, because he has a stoppage loss to Gokhan Saki back in the day. But he was a consistent fighter who had international opportunities here and there. Strong guy, loved being in the gym. And I've heard nothing but good things come from people. He died of complications with diabetes. 36 years old. You know, even if you're not fighting anymore, it's still really, really young. You never want to lose anybody, you know, at that early into their life. But I definitely think that he's a talented guy, and I wish him all the best. Wish his family all the best as they deal with this. I thought that he was a guy who really gave good effort and showed good skill when he was out there. But, you know, it's just something that, as a Christian guy, we say it's from all the time. You don't know the hour. And we lost him at 36. I hope, you know, pray him and all his family the best. And I really hope that you guys, as a kickboxing community, whether you say it with your RIP post or whether you say it in prayer, however you say it, whether you just do it with kindness towards people, definitely take a moment. Remember Utley Mariana. I know most of you don't know who he is. So I know a lot of you do know who he is. But just a guy who was in the sport. And because of that, we are drawn and appreciate him for the time he put into the combat sports world. So God bless everybody. Thank you for listening to my show, and I will be back in a week with another one. Peace.